Special funding for the podcast of On Point is provided by Boston University School of Law, dedicated to excellence in teaching and to preparing lawyers for global challenges.
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Barack Obama and John McCain met for their second big showdown at a town hall debate in Nashville last night. For all the global turmoil in the past few weeks, it was a familiar refrain of change versus experience that took the floor. Here's Barack Obama.
We can't expect that if we do the same things that we've been doing over the last 8 years, that somehow we are going to have a different outcome.
And here's John McCain.
We don't have time for on-the-job training, my friend.
This hour on Point, the town hall debate in Nashville, what it tells us and where it leaves the campaigns with less than a month now to Election Day. You can join the conversation. How did you score the Nashville matchup? Who's won? Who's winning your vote? In a moment, we will hear from top Democratic and Republican strategists about where they see the candidates now in the race and what we heard last night. But first, joining us is Jake Tapper, senior national correspondent for ABC News, who was in Nashville for the debate. Jake, thanks for joining us.
Anytime, Tom.
So we'll look at the details, but how do you read the bottom line, Jake? Who comes out of Nashville looking like what?
Well, a lot of Senator McCain's advisors and aides, and Senator McCain himself, said he was going to take the gloves off last night, that he was... There's the political winds, the political dynamics right now are favorable to Senator Obama. He's ahead in the polls in all the key battleground states. It still remains, in terms of a national poll, very tight in terms of the numbers. But state by state, Senator Obama has an advantage. And the economic crisis, which continues, helps Senator Obama, as crude and uncomfortable that may be to acknowledge. It's just true. It helps him because voters trust him to handle the economy more. So McCain needed to shake things up. On the stump, he and his running mate and his campaign have been going after Senator Obama with very strong personal attacks. Those did not come out of Senator McCain's mouth last night. It was a very issue-oriented attack, and I'm not sure that he changed the game in the way that many of his allies and his advisors thought that he needed to do.
It was a town hall meeting, but not exactly anything like a rambunctious setting there, Jake. How was the audience prepped for this event? Were they told, you know, heads down, quiet, not a peep? There wasn't really much audience interaction aside from the very targeted questions.
That's right. Well, yeah, the audience was told to be quiet and not to applaud and not to boo. And for that reason, I think it looked a little bit like a night of the living dead. In terms of the audience, in terms of town hall meeting, one of the John Berman, a colleague of mine who manned our fact check desk last night, said that the biggest fact to be checked was the fact that it was a town hall called a town hall meeting. It wasn't a town hall meeting. It was a town hall meeting in name only. When Charlie Gibson did one of these 4 years ago, 18 people in the audience got to ask questions. Last night, as much as I revere Tom Brokaw, he only called on members of the audience 8 times, and he asked questions 9 times. So it was kind of a town hall meeting where the mayor took control of the town.
Jake, we'll look at the answers. What did you make of the demeanor of the two men last night? McCain kind of prowling, more aggressive, moving around even as Obama was speaking. Obama cooler, sort of more self-contained. Is that deliberate? Is that just character?
Well, it's character, and it's also just, I mean, Senator McCain is A, by nature restless, and B, because of his war injuries, moves around a lot. It's the reason why he rubs his hands together all the time. It's because the war injuries left him in such a state that moving around helps relieve pain. The McCain campaign believes that a town hall meeting setting favors Senator McCain in general because he's good on the stump. He's good interacting with voters. They're not going to go after Tom Brokaw, who they like a lot. But, you know, there's a lot of disappointment that McCain did not get to interact with as many voters. There was one nice moment with a fellow Navy veteran towards the end of the debate where McCain had a nice human moment, perhaps the most human moment of the debate for either candidate. I think that Senator Obama is he's cool as a cucumber. I mean, that's just him. And for that reason, that the Obama people were aware that in a lot of the shots that the TV people were going to be, showing to the audience back home in America that people were going to see both of them, and Obama, you know, kept the script, and he looked cool and watched McCain and listened to the questions and was acting as if he was aware the camera was on him at all times. McCain did not act like that, maybe because he's so used to having his town hall meetings on his own terms. It seemed, just sitting there in the auditorium, it seemed like he didn't particularly like looking at Senator Obama. He didn't really look at him very often.
And Jake, what did you think of the, I don't know how to put this exactly, the altitude of the conversation or the intensity of it, given the turmoil in the world outside that hall? Was it up to the circumstances swirling around Nashville and every place else these days?
I think Senator Obama benefits right now from the fact that he's a Democrat, and Democrats generally have an advantage on this issue, on economic issues, with voters in the same way the Republicans just have an institutional advantage when it comes to national security and issues. But I agree. I think that they were speaking very high up, both of them, although they both tried not to. But I still, and this is me speaking as a voter, not so much as a political reporter, I still don't sense that either one of these guys has convinced large swaths of the American people that they get it, they understand it, and they have a plan, and here's what it is, in the way that Bill Clinton, to at least the plurality of the country, was able to do in 1992. I agree with the underlying premise of your question that I don't think that emotionally they were there yet.
Well, Jake Tapper was there in Nashville last night, talking with us from the airport in Nashville today from ABC News. Jake, it's always great to speak with you. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you, Tom. Always a pleasure.
We're going to turn now to top strategists from each party. Joining us from New York is top Democratic strategist Bob Schrum. He's worked on 8 presidential campaigns, from McGovern to Kerry. He's now a senior fellow at the Wagner School of Public Service at NYU. His book is No Excuses, Concessions of a Serial Campaigner. Bob, thanks for joining us.
Glad to be here, Tom.
And joining us from Los Angeles is Republican Dan Schnur. He's worked on 4 presidential campaigns, including Reagan Bush and Bush Quayle. He was director of communications for John McCain's 2000 presidential campaign. He's now director of the Institute of Politics at the University of Southern California. Dan, thank you for joining us.
Tom, thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
First to you, a lot of expectations of John McCain last night. He's been lagging in the polls and lagging further in the polls. Did he do the necessary last night in Nashville, Dan?
Well, Tom, I guess I would say this. I think John McCain did everything he could do last night. He was sharper and probably better organized in his thinking and his speaking than he had been in the first debate. He attempted to make a fairly dramatic or provocative point on the economy by talking about his housing plan. The town hall format worked his benefit in ways that Jake mentioned earlier. All of that said, even for those who think John McCain may have succeeded in the debate last night, what's pretty clear is that in the context of all this real-world economic turmoil, winning a debate by anything less than a very decisive knockout isn't enough for John McCain. So good night, but 27 days out with chances running out, I'm not sure he accomplished what he needed to.
Bob Schrum, a good night for John McCain, but maybe not good enough. What about for Barack Obama?
Well, I thought the night was actually slightly better for John McCain than the first debate, but far from good enough. And I'm intrigued when I listen to this conversation where we, I guess, live in an alternate universe. We actually know what people thought about who won the debate. We have a series of polls. They tell us by a margin of about 2-1 in most cases. There's one that's a slightly lower margin from CBS of uncommitted voters. Thought that Obama won, and I believe the big headline of the debate isn't any specific issue. It's that the American people are getting more and more comfortable with the idea of President Obama. He conveys a sense of calmness and strength, that kind of grace under pressure that Americans prize in a president. And that's what's making it so difficult for John McCain. He now has to reverse a presumption that I think is building across the country, that people are going to vote for Obama, that Obama's going to be the president. And he couldn't do it by fulfilling the promises of some in his campaign that he would go to the lowest level, because I think he understood that if he did some of this airs junk and other stuff, he would come across as distinctly non-presidential. In addition to which, at a time of economic crisis, as you referred to, people care a lot more about paying their bills than they do about some guy named Bill Ayers. And I think McCain sort of understood that last night.
Did you see enough fire from Obama? Cool, yes, but too cool given the very strenuous circumstances in the world right now?
You know, I'm beginning to think that some of us believe that punditocracy is the essence of democracy, because we keep saying this, and I keep hearing it. And then when you get inside these polls and you say, does Obama understand the problems of people like you? 65, 70, 75% of people are saying yes. When you listen to him give that health care answer last night where he talked about his mother and what happened to her as she was dying, you get a sense of his capacity to connect emotionally. But look, he's not going to display anger. The worst thing that could happen to him politically is to come across as angry. He is going to come across as empathetic. I think he does to people, maybe not in the way the press wants, but it seems in a way that the voters can relate to.
And Dan Schnorr, when it comes to John McCain, he was showing a lot of passion last night. Is passion going to, you know, be enough? Does he have to roll out more economic planning, more economic reassurance? How does he do that?
Tom, can I first just start by telling you and my friend Bob that I'm still reeling from his assertion that punditocracy is not democracy. That's going to take some...
you'll digest that over a matter of weeks.
I know. What have we all been doing?
Oh, my gosh. Bob, I don't know how I'm going to face the world tomorrow. What have you done to us?
Yeah, right.
Hey, Dan,
hold the thought. We've got to take a punditocracy break here. We'll come right back and get your answer on that, hear from the candidates and our listeners. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the town hall debate in Nashville, Obama and McCain duking it out on the home stretch to Election Day. Bob Schrum joins us. He has been a top Democratic strategist in presidential politics for a long, long time, from McGovern to John Kerry in 2004. Dan Schnorr is with us from Los Angeles. He was director of communications for John McCain in his 2000 run and has been in the middle of these all the way back to Bush Quayle and Reagan Bush in 1984. Dan Schnorr, we had you in the spotlight there. A lot of tough stuff going on from Sarah Palin on the campaign trail, from McCain ads on television and the web around the country. So do the debates make a difference? Can they? Will they make the difference for him? He's only got one left. You saw what he delivered last night.
Well, as we talked about a little bit earlier, even though I thought McCain did have a very solid, certainly a stronger debate performance last night than his first one, the campaign trail has just been overshadowed to an extraordinary degree by real-world events from Wall Street and in the financial markets. And the great irony here is that neither Obama or McCain won their respective party primaries by talking about the economy. Both won by talking about Iraq. And neither, I would argue, has sounded particularly comfortable or nearly as confident talking about the economy over the last few weeks as they have other issues like Iraq, like energy, like health care, and so on. McCain made a good try on it last night with his proposal for housing relief. But once again, I think even a good debate performance wasn't enough to change the overall direction of the race. And, you know, he's running out of chances to do that.
How did you interpret that? On housing relief, he was talking about the federal government buying up some, it sounded like, all troubled mortgages, resetting the value of that home, resetting the mortgage and turning them back to people. Now, that's supposed to be in the bailout plan, some kind of provisions for that already. But is that realistic? Could the federal government really buy up every bad mortgage in this country, reprice it, and turn it back at a lower monthly payment?
I don't pretend to be an expert in this stuff, but as I understand from what I read over the last couple of weeks about this proposal are two things. Number one, the bailout plan they passed allows the Treasury Secretary to do this. I think McCain's point last night is, as president, he would require the Treasury Secretary to do it. Is it workable? It's certainly very expensive. And it certainly flies in the face of a deregulatory Republican dogma that I think McCain has recognized is not something that the voters mood for in this particular environment.
Let's go to our listeners. They were watching. They've got their own observations. Matt in Glens Falls, New York. Matt, you're on the air.
I'm particularly concerned, Tom, that we as the American people and the media, television mm-hmm. in particular, are spending so much time worrying about how these candidates look speaking to each other in what usually is a somewhat prepared photo op, you know, that the CPD has arranged. When is it we're going to have a media that's going to say, and NPR does this quite frequently, when are we going to have third-party inclusion? So we can talk about single-payer health care. We can actually talk about leaving Iraq rather than how long the two-party candidates are going to leave us there. We can talk about an economy that's not about bailing out pirates. My disappointment with the debates is that they lack democracy. And I saw that last night, as I did in the vice presidential debate and the first presidential.
What, lack democracy because we don't still have eight people standing up there? I mean, there's a process that we've gone through, Matt. Do you want Ralph Nader and everybody on the stage? Is that what you're saying?
I basically would like anybody who has, a chance of winning the Electoral College. And this time around, Bob Barr, Cynthia McKinney, Chuck Baldwin, and Ralph Nader are all on enough states that they could. So I'm curious. The CPD has admitted that they are now so-called using the Gallup poll. And Gallup was quoted just the other day in the New York Times saying that really it's an arbitrary decision.
Matt, let us go to this issue of demeanor and look and versus issues. I don't want to get completely snagged up in third-party candidates. We know they're there. Everybody can find their message. But, Bob Schrum, on the issue, I mean, how do you look at a debate like that? How much does demeanor matter to voters? Is it a credible thing for them to be assessing on? How do you, as a professional strategist, stack it up against the nuts and bolts of their proposals, their issue responses?
Well, sometimes it can be decisive. If you look at the transcript of the first debate between Gore and Bush, it's pretty clear that Gore won very clearly on the issues. I think the Republicans understood that and did a very good job of spinning the idea that the debate was really about sighing and exaggerations when it turned out, of course, with one minor exception, there wasn't an exaggeration, but they won that spin war. I think the really important thing in terms of McCain, and I agree with Dan here, is even if you think he did well last night, and I don't, and I actually believe that he looked awkward in the town hall format, that all the moving around he had to do didn't make him look as comfortable as, for example, when he's standing behind a podium. I think even if you think he did better last night, he still didn't pass the threshold on the economy with voters. He's not there. This $300 billion proposal doesn't get him there. People don't really understand it. Obama, in contrast, in that first debate, passed the threshold on national security. They each have a challenge. Obama has met his so far. McCain has still to meet his, and time is running out.
John McCain going after Obama on the economic front, on the tax front last night. Let's hear them sparring here. McCain hammering it away on with his description of Obama's tax policies.
Nailing down Senator Obama's various tax proposals is like nailing Jell-O to the wall. There's been five or six of them, and if you wait long enough, there'll probably be another one. But he wants to raise taxes. My friends, the last president to raise taxes during tough economic times was Herbert Hoover, and he practiced protectionism as well, which I'm sure we'll get to at some point.
A cheeky zing trying to put the Herbert Hoover tag on the Democratic candidate Barack Obama. Okay, it's rough and tumble. Obama punched back and said most Americans would get a tax cut under his plan.
Senator McCain, I think the straight talk express lost a wheel on that one. So let's be clear about my tax plan and Senator McCain's, because we're not going to be able to deal with entitlements unless we understand the revenues coming in. I want to provide a tax cut for 95% of Americans. 95%. If you make less than $250,000 a year, you will not see a single dime of your taxes go up. If you make $200,000 a year or less, your taxes will go down.
Barack Obama putting it in the simplest numbers that he can right there. Dan Schnoor, who plays Herbert Hoover in this grand drama we're in the middle of here right now? Isn't it George Bush? And what about attacking on the tax front? It's worked in many presidential campaigns for Republicans. Does it work this time?
Well, I don't know that there is a Herbert Hoover in this particular discussion, except as the object of the other side's derisions.
Sitting president, economy in flames. Okay,
no, but in fairness, the type of policy remedies that were enacted mm-hmm. in the Hoover administration, the tax increases and the more restrictionist trade policies are not something that we've seen from this administration.
True, George Bush's Treasury Secretary and Fed Chief certainly turning on the taps is about as big as they could be right now.
No question, but once again, I think the lessons learned not only by the administration but by Bernanke and leading mm-hmm. congressional representatives in both parties on the Hill are doing everything they can to avoid a repeat of the late 1920s and early 1930s. The difficulty about an exchange like this on taxes, for example, gets back to the point that you were making earlier, Tom, about demeanor. Most voters watching this debate are not sitting there with flowcharts that can decide in a very determinative way which candidate is telling the truth. Similarly, most voters do not know to this day, myself included, whether bailing out AIG and not bailing out Lehman Brothers, for example, was the right or wrong thing to do. So the way a candidate presents himself, the way he or she develops a level of trust and confidence with the voters is very important. Dana Milbank, the columnist for The Washington Post, mm-hmm. has taken to referring to this as the Goldilocks campaign. One candidate's too hot, the other candidate's too cold. And there was some supposition before the first debate that both McCain and Obama would sort of try to adjust themselves closer to room temperature. The idea that McCain would attempt to be a little bit less emotional, a little bit less combative, and that Obama would try to be a little bit less reserved and removed. And I think what they both realized last night is, look, this is who I am. John McCain says, I'm a fighter. Barack Obama says, I'm a soother. This is who I am. Trying to pretend to be anything else is silly. Let the voters decide what type of leadership style makes the most sense to them going through this kind of treacherous time period.
Bob Schrum, on the merits then, on the tax front, I mean, there's always a combination of issues and theater here. When Senator McCain talks about, says it's like nailing Jell-O to the wall to try and nail down these various tax proposals, and Barack Obama comes back with what sounds like a pretty simple explanation, maybe simplistic, but nevertheless, very straightforward. Does McCain win on turn of phrase, on characterization? Does Obama win by, here's what I will do, ABC?
Most of those phrases, when the focus groups and the dial groups have been listening to these debates, have done very badly. When Joe Biden said, that's a real bridge to nowhere in the vice presidential debate, the dials went straight down. I think people are actually trying to listen. And I agree with Dan, they don't have a flow chart. But I thought Obama was so clear and gave such a clear undertaking that people understood that if they didn't make over $250,000, they weren't going to pay more in taxes. Now, some may suspect he's not telling the truth, but those people probably aren't available to him anyway. Look, McCain's real problem here is that he has long lacked a credible economic argument and proposal. The truth of the matter is Dan Schnur and Mike Murphy, who was his strategist in 2000, should have been back in that campaign, and it would have been a different kind of campaign. It's a campaign of tactics that grabs on to the convenient opportunity of the day instead of having a consistent narrative to tell the country. And it stuns me because the one candidate I would have bet had a powerful narrative when he ran for president would have been John McCain.
Well, we heard a lot about that narrative at the conventions. Now we've got a crisis going on. Let's go to Greenville, South Carolina, and Gerald. Gerald, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yes, sir.
After watching the first debate and now watching the second one, the one thing that got me was that John McCain couldn't look at Barack Obama and that there's a real contempt for him. But then when he said to the young black man that asked the question, you know, you probably hadn't heard of Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac, you know, and, you know, kind of to me as a black man, you know, it almost implied that, you know, we sit under a rock and when we need batteries for our boombox, we come out and we go into the world and we go get them. And I was really appalled by that statement. But the other thing is that John McCain, you know, I wasn't decided last time I voted for George Bush, but I wasn't decided. But McCain is just, he's an angry person. And I'm not sure, at this time, since things are really crucial and really critical, I don't want a hothead and a POW with his finger on the trigger of the button.
Gerald, we hear it. Let us jump right on it. Dan Schnur, what about it? There is a racial context floating around this campaign. You get on the Republican blogosphere. There's plenty about poor black inner-city people and mortgages right now. Does that make it hard when John McCain approached that young man that Gerald's talking about last night And here's a black viewer in South Carolina who felt he talked down to him, assuming maybe he'd never heard of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac before.
I guess I'd offer a couple things. One, that was certainly not a good moment from Senator McCain, and I think it's an error he would have made regardless of the race or ethnicity of the questioner. The point he was trying to make, I think a legitimate point, is that most voters did not follow Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, were particularly familiar with what they did until this crisis hit. And that is a legitimate point to make. The fact that he made that point to an African-American questioner, particularly in the context of this campaign, was not a great moment for him. But I think it's worth noting, and I offer this not as a former McCain advisor, mm-hmm. but just as an observer, that his campaign, despite other things that they have done well or not particularly well, they have worked pretty scrupulously not to engage in the kind of race-based or religion-based discussion that's emanated from other quarters. One of the downsides, you know, of this hyper-media environment in which we live is that there are extreme voices on both sides of the aisle making allegations and making charges that both candidates would do well to denounce. I think regardless of whether you think McCain made a mistake last night in that particular exchange, and I think he did, it is worth noting how hard he's worked to keep the race and religion issues off the table in the campaign.
Though extreme voices not far off the aisle, I'd have to say. Bob Schrum, another moment, maybe tied to this, maybe not, I'm not sure, where John McCain referred to Barack Obama as that one. That one. It was an odd locution. It left me wondering, that one what, Senator McCain? That one...
Well, I think that's what gives a certain amount, Tom, what gives a certain amount of credibility to the last caller's question. It may be, although this is not necessarily a defense the McCain campaign would want to make, that he had temporarily forgotten Obama's name. But the way it came across was condescending, angry, didn't want to be on the stage with the guy, doesn't believe he belongs there. The revenge, I think, will be that the Obama campaign will probably sell tens of thousands of T-shirts with Obama's picture and the words "that one" on it. Now, the one thing, and I have enormous respect for Dan, but what does he think Sarah Palin is doing out there when she's talking about Obama's not someone who sees America the way we see it? I mean, when the Associated Press writes a long piece analyzing what she's been saying and some of what McCain's been saying, and suggest that what they're really doing is bringing race into this, they make a pretty persuasive case.
We'll come to that. I want to hear a little more from last night. Here's an audience member in the town hall, Teresa Finch, asking why the public should trust either party to get us out of economic crisis.
How can we trust either of you with our money when both parties got us into this global economic crisis?
Well, look, I understand your frustration and your cynicism, because while you've been carrying out your responsibilities, most of the people here, you've got a family budget. If less money's coming in, you end up making cuts. Maybe you don't go out to dinner as much. Maybe you put off buying a new car. That's not what happens in Washington.
Bob Schrum, both parties. I mean, voters are pretty good at telling it like it is sometimes. Both parties got us into this an awkward moment, and not without its big truth.
Well, but Obama benefits. This is a place where I think Obama benefits from what some would call his inexperience. He hasn't been around the Senate and Washington for a long period of time. On the natural, and I agree with something Dan said much earlier, Democrats have a big advantage on the economy. Bush and the Republicans have been the in party when this happened. So that when you ask people who's better on the economy, I think in the polling last night and the polling day after day after day, Obama has a 20-30 point lead. That's one of McCain's problems. He needs to pass the threshold on the economy, but the more he talks about the economy, the more he's fighting on Obama's ground. In a way, you got to feel sorry for McCain at some level. He wanted to have this campaign on national security. Events changed that. Obama passed the test on national security no matter how hard he tries, no matter how much he recycles the phrase, you don't understand, he's not making progress.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking about the town hall debate in Nashville. Obama and McCain duking it out on the home stretch now, under a month to Election Day. We've been joined by Democratic strategist Bob Schrum, been in lots of presidential campaigns, and Dan Schnoor, Republican political and media strategist, was John McCain's communications director in his 2000 campaign. They know what these campaigns feel like from the inside. We're joined right now from Nashville, Tennessee, by Bill Schneider, senior political analyst for CNN. Bill, thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you, Tom.
Bill, what do you think about the encounter last night and how the interaction may be shaping voter understanding of these two men? Is cool good? Is hot good? Were they respectful enough? Does it matter?
I think that the voters were waiting to hear what they had to say about how we're going to get out of this mess.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure they heard it. They heard some detail, but not nearly enough. The voters are frightened. They're anxious. They want both information about what each candidate's plans are, and they would like some reassurance that they should not be fearful we're going to get out of this. Both candidates spent a lot of time giving their packaged campaign speeches, but neither one of them really had the Clinton touch, which was to be able to relate to the questioners, to the voters, individually, to show that kind of empathy. I don't think either one of those candidates has that skill.
You know, Bill, there was something that surprised me. I felt almost a kind of muting of the magnitude of the economic crisis we're facing right now in that room, and I'm not sure why. You can imagine why, I suppose, McCain might not want to point to calamity, but wouldn't it be advantageous for Obama? Why not, you know, really turn the big spotlight on just how bad this is right now? Of course, there were references, but they seemed a little muted to me, given what's going on outside.
Well, neither candidate wanted to frighten people. They didn't need to make people any more anxious than they already are. I think they both understand that the voters are looking for some kind of reassurance. Everyone remembers the Franklin Roosevelt message, we have nothing to fear but fear itself. And so they don't want to alarm voters. I think Obama did point several times to the current crisis being the product of what's been happening in the country over the last 8 years. And if you had to draw a contrast between the two candidates, I would say that Obama's argument is that this is a failure of policy. We have pursued the wrong policy. Mm. He points to the last 8 years under the Bush administration. A lot of Republicans would say, well, actually, it's both administrations' fault. You go all the way back to the 1990s and the Clinton era, because Clinton also adopted a lot of policies of deregulation. Nevertheless, he argued that it was a policy failure and we need a new policy direction. McCain's argument had to do with wrongdoing, that there's too much greed, too much corruption, too many perpetrators of their own good at the expense of the country, and that reform is needed much more than a change in policy. Those are two strong arguments, and the voters are going to have to make that decision.
Dan Schnoor, there in Los Angeles, you hear Bill Schneider's interpretation. What about John McCain when it comes to going after greed and corruption, and when it really goes, when he goes after, in a sense, deregulation? I mean, can he turn around on that credibly? And when he says reform, does he mean re-regulation, or what does he mean?
Well, he does talk in a very, very specific way about warnings that he offered on Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac some years back. But more broadly, I think it goes back to the difference that Bill just outlined is exactly right, and it goes back to the sort of the temperamental difference we were discussing earlier, the choice between a fighter and a soother. I think Bill correctly points out that what the American people are looking for in such difficult economic times is reassurance. Someone who is going to soothe and reassure them might be a more natural place for them to turn than someone who wants to rally them to arms against a difficult-to-identify enemy.
Let's take a call from Virginia Beach, Virginia. Karen, you're on the air with some big thinkers here on politics. What do you think, Karen?
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Well, I was just concerned about how in the past we had the dot-com boom, where it was almost a joke, where Wall Street was funding almost any company that put dot-com
mm-hmm.
at the end of their name.
Mm-hmm.
And then we had the dot-bomb, and then we had the mortgage boom, and now we have the mortgage bust. And I'm wondering if anybody there feels that either of these candidates are going to do anything to prevent whatever the next big thing is that comes along.
Bob Schrum, Barack Obama's the challenger. He's the out of the White House party. Should he be putting forward even more sweeping ideas about what's coming up here? Would that be compelling now or scary?
I think he's put forth a number of pretty sweeping ideas. It's clear to me that the era of deregulation, at least as we've known it, is over. Next year, there's going to be a lot more safeguards are going to be put in place. One of the problems McCain has is that ending earmarks is not an economic policy. And I agree with Bill. He's sort of tried to talk about the past and about his past record. But what he seems to be fighting about is mostly himself and Obama. He doesn't come across as someone who's fighting for the middle class, a word he didn't use again in this debate last night. And I think Obama walks a very fine line. Gene Robinson, the superb columnist for The Washington Post, said that he has to come across as the least angry black man in America. And I think he does need to come across and feels he needs to come across as the Democratic candidate who happens to be African-American, not the other way around. And he needs to make sure, not just that he's soothing, because I'm not sure that's the right word, but that he's calm and reasonable and seems like a sure pair of hands at a time when the country feels very fearful about its future.
Bill Schneider, I know I've just got you for another minute here. What about the issue of aggressive campaigning inside and outside that hall? John McCain, the more aggressive last night, of course, he's behind. People say he needs to be. On the other hand, our guests point out that outside that hall, Sarah Palin and much of the Republican campaign has been very, very tough. And some of these rallies where Sarah Palin has been recently, you know, you've got really, really an angry mood in these rallies. Is anger a good weapon for the McCain campaign at this point, Bill?
No, it isn't, but I'm not sure what else they can do. I mean, the election is turning against them. We're seeing poll after poll in every battleground state tilting towards Obama. Voters clearly want change. The only thing they have left that they can do is to create doubts about Obama, to make him sound like a risky candidate. What they know is that for much of this year, the election was really a referendum on Barack Obama. It isn't right now. It's a referendum on the economy and on the George Bush record. But for much of this year, it was all about Obama. And if they can return to that, maybe they have a chance to win because Americans are being asked to take a certain risk. They've been asked to take risks before. They took a risk when they voted for Ronald Reagan in 1980. They were afraid he was going to start a war or throw old people out in the snow. But they were so angry and upset about the way things were going, they took that risk. They took a risk when they voted for Jimmy Carter. He was pretty unknown in 1976. So what McCain and Palin are trying to do is to say, you don't want to take this risk. It's much too risky. But by the only way they do that is to reflect a certain anger. And I think last night in the debate, we saw in the response to the debate when we interviewed voters, they didn't like all that anger. They responded against it.
Maybe the crisis makes it even more unsettling to hear. Bill Schneider, senior political analyst for CNN, great to have you with us. Thanks very much for being here from Nashville.
Sure, my pleasure.
Let's get a call from New Haven, Connecticut, and Bonita. Bonita, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I wanted to make a comment and see what your guests thought about the fact that a lot of the media make a lot about the fact that neither candidate seems to give a plan for how to make the economy better at this point in time. But my observation is that if they do and they make a commitment and it doesn't work, that it'll be, or it doesn't seem that it would work, that it would be something that's used against them and would hurt their candidacy. So I wanted to know what your guests thought about that.
Bonita, thanks very much. Dan Schnorr, how about it? John McCain last night repeatedly saying in reference to many issues, I know how to do this. I know how to make that happen. Is that persuasive on the economy?
Well, again, as I was saying earlier, I don't know that either candidate has been particularly persuasive on the economy. McCain, of course, is carrying around the baggage of an administration of his party for the last 8 years. And I think Obama has been content to be a little bit more detached, knowing that the broader political winds are working in his favor for just that reason. But to be fair to both of them, neither of them really knows what it's going to take to fix this crisis, because as near as I can tell, nobody knows. And on one hand, a candidate has to project certainty and in direction. But when push comes to shove, if you inject either one of these two men with truth serum, they would tell you, we've never seen anything like this before in our lives, and neither one of us knows exactly how to handle it.
Bob, do you have a sense that Obama has a, you know, some great new direction in mind that he's not fully unveiling? Do you see it unveiled? And I wonder throughout this, he goes at George Bush, but he doesn't really talk down the Republican Party very much. And why not? They've had a lot of power for a long time.
Well, he's not trying. He's trying not to be partisan. He's trying to indicate that he'll reach across the aisle and work with people. But, you know, this is an intriguing discussion because if you had followed what Franklin Roosevelt said in 1932, you wouldn't have had a very good idea of what he was going to do in 1933.
Yeah, yeah.
In 1960, you would never have predicted that John Kennedy would propose the largest tax cut in American history as president. I think what voters are looking at is temperament, judgment, who can they put in charge at a time when they're fearful about the future of the country and the future of the economy. Because they understand, as one of those questions said last night or suggested last night, that a lot of what the next president's going to have to deal with, we don't know the exact contours of the problems and we don't know the exact contours of the solutions.
Let's get a call from Mark in Sumter, South Carolina. Mark, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi, Tom.
Hi.
I watched the debate last night, and I'm a small businessman. I own a restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
And when Obama said that he was going to provide, you know, families and small businesses that make under $250,000 no increase in taxes,
mm-hmm.
it made me feel like he, as well as John McCain, have a huge disconnect with real people who own small businesses.
Why?
Well, because take myself, for instance. We're an LLC. I gross over $300,000 a year in sales,
mm-hmm.
which is technically counted as income for me.
Right.
However, we spend almost that same amount of money just to maintain this business. My wife and I don't take a paycheck because we reinvested in the business because we're trying to just get by.
So John McCain was speaking to you then when he said Barack Obama will raise taxes on small business.
He spoke to me, yes, but I also feel that he's a little disconnected because, you know, he's married into money. I feel like he is a candidate that comes from privilege, including, you know, his grandfather and father from the Navy.
So where do you come down, given your own business, given the country's circumstances? Have you decided where you're going to come down, Mark?
Well, you know, I do want change. I am a Republican, but I have a huge disconnect with our new neocon policies. So I'm probably going to vote Democrat. I would love to vote for another person like Bob Barr or Ralph Nader who has real ideas for change. However, that's not going to happen. So, you know, for me, the real candidate is Obama, but I don't believe that he understands real small business in America.
Mark, good luck with the business there. And Bob and Dan, you can hear a lot of change on the boil there. People in all kinds of circumstances open to things that they might not have been in another year. I want to get one more clip in here. This was John McCain near the end talking with, reaching out to this retired Navy officer, Terry Shirey, who asked McCain how strong his defense of Israel would be.
If despite your best diplomatic efforts, Iran attacks Israel, would you be willing to commit U.S. troops in support and defense of Israel, or would you wait on approval from the U.N. Security Council?
Well, thank you, Terry, and thank you for your service to the country. I want to say everything I ever learned about leadership, I learned from a chief petty officer, and I thank you, my friend. Thanks for serving. Let me say that we obviously would not wait for the United Nations Security Council. I think the realities are that both Russia and China would probably pose significant obstacles. And our challenge right now is the Iranians continue on the path to acquiring nuclear weapons, and it's a great threat.
Bob Schrum, there was John McCain on his favorite ground, national security, with a veteran, you know, shaking hands right there. I mean, there is still an appeal to this candidate, and you can see it at a moment like that, apparently with that voter.
I thought that the beginning of that was McCain's best moment. He then veered off into this argument about whether we should negotiate with Iran or negotiate with enemy states. It's an argument that he continually insists on making. He believes it, obviously, even though all the data show that the public tend to agree with Obama and, frankly, with a series of Republican secretaries of state over the last 20 years, that we do need to have these negotiations. But you got to give McCain credit. He stands his ground on these things. He argues nonstop, the same positions on national security all the time. It's just he hasn't connected with the country on them. The thing that was astounding last night was that in these polls, you got about a 50-50 split on who could handle terrorism. When that happens and the Democrat is that competitive with the Republican and so far ahead on the economy and so far ahead on health care, you know that John McCain has a very steep mountain to climb.
Dan Schnur, does McCain have time to turn it around? One more debate, 4 weeks. Is there time for the GOP ticket to turn around? And if it's turned around, will it be John McCain who does it based on the evidence of last night, or will it be Sarah Palin out with her populist message on the hustings?
Well, there is still time for John McCain. As Bob will tell you, 4 weeks is several lifetimes in politics. That said, I'm struck that even McCain's advisors are quoted in the morning papers saying that as long as the public attention stays focused on the economy as intently as it does, they don't think that they can win. It seems unlikely that public attention is going to shift from economic matters over the next 4 weeks, which means that John McCain and his advisors need to find a way to build on what he started last night, talking on this housing issue, and offer a more compelling message on economic matters than either he or Obama has done to this point. What struck me just very quickly, Tom, is not the last clip, but your last caller. This is a voter who John McCain is talking to about Barack Obama's tax plan.
Directly.
It's a voter who clearly believes what John McCain is telling him about Barack Obama's tax plan, and he's still not comfortable voting for McCain, and primarily, once again, because neither one of these candidates has shown an intuitive feel for a discussion of economic issues the way they are when they talk about Iraq, when they talk about energy, when they talk about health care. That's still the greatest challenge for both men.
Dan Schnur, Republican political and media strategist, joining us from Los Angeles today. Dan, thanks very much for being with us. Great to have you.
Thanks for having me, Tom. I really appreciate it.
Bob Schrum, a last word, and I mean word. We've got 6-7 seconds here for Barack Obama.
I think Obama is headed for about 300, 310 or 20 electoral votes and about 52-53% of the popular vote.
Bob Schrum's last word today, 4 weeks to go, not even. Bob, thanks very much for being with us.
Glad to be here.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.